So, a little bit of inside baseball for you before we begin. For 2014, and technically starting this week, we've switched to a new recording rig that should enable us to record live to tape and get our podcast out faster to you. Also, to keep things fresh and ensure a general higher level of quality, we're switching to a bi-monthly release schedule. The bottom line is, we're back, baby. We're live, and better than ever. So strap it on, because today's film, the second movie of the Disney Renaissance, and the second coming of everyone's favorite janitor and Hungarian diplomouse, is The Rescuers Down Under. He's Catatonic Cat, I'm Dragaroo, and this is Two Guys Without a Clue. First, it's time for some news. Catatonic Cat, take it away.
News? What news?
Yeah, what's new, man?
Oh, man. You're putting me on the spot.
It's been a while. This is our first podcast of the new year.
Oh, yeah, it's the new year. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It's been great. It's been 2 weeks of this new year. Mm-hmm. I'm still incredibly jet lagged, so if I fall asleep suddenly, I'll live up to my name.
Fantastic.
I know.
Well, there is some actual news as well. You've heard about the Golden Globes nomination, right?
I heard about the Golden Globes nomination.
Not only nomination. What happened there?
Meryl Streep?
Meryl Streep.
Yeah?
Was that at the Golden Globes?
No, that was announcing what the...
Yeah, there was some controversy over some comments regarding Walt Disney.
Yeah, he's a racist.
Oh.
That's what the controversy is.
See, the weird thing for me is I first learned of it through the Walt Disney Family Museum's Twitter. Like, they were saying, yeah, don't believe what Meryl Streep has to say. And then I later read some article on Cartoon Brew that was kind of addressing each of the points and saying how they were not entirely legit. But can you explain? Because I really don't know exactly what the context of her remarks and
I mean, it's in response to being... So this last winter, we talked about it. The movie Saving Mr. Banks came out.
Oh.
And I think this brought to light more of Walt Disney, and I don't know what Meryl Streep has with Walt Disney or what beef or whatever. I'm not going to go into any of that stuff. But she went off on a rant basically for 10 minutes before introducing nominees and things like that. And
oh, so she was there giving an award.
Yeah, she was there.
Okay, yeah.
Well, to the winner. Perfect, what's her name?
Perfect platform.
The winner that she played P.L. Travers in the movie.
Uh-huh.
And before she got the award, she made a big rant about Disney being racist. I don't know where she got her facts. I think that's where most people are saying this. No one's denying the fact that the possibility of racism existed, but there's also the possibility. I mean, a lot of people are considering look at the times, right? A lot of the argument is.
Right. You know, the comments I've been reading have said that pretty much exactly what you're saying. Like, he wasn't more racist than was kind of to be expected of the era. So it doesn't exactly make him a saint, but conversely, it's not like he was. I guess a lot of the kind of not critique, but kind of the criticism that Disney has gotten, it was because of his affiliation with it was like a supposedly anti-Semitic organization. During the time when communism was an issue.
We looked at this when we went to the Disney Museum, too, mm-hmm. right? I mean, they blatantly say that there were articles and things written about that.
Right.
A lot of stuff that I think was said by Meryl Streep was taken out of context.
Yeah, for sure.
And like you said, I think he wasn't more racist than the times.
Mm.
There was a lot of things about anti-feminism because the female voice was not heard in the actual storyboards and things like that early in the day. But I mean, if you look at other animation studios, that was pretty much the status quo.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like that justifies it or anything, but that was the reality of the time.
Yeah, I'm not saying anything is justifying. I think what both of us are basically saying is look at the context of the times and then put it in perspective. Right. I think you would have to say the same thing back in when any big studio or anything was happening, like let's say the 60s, the studios were somewhat anti-Semitic too, because there was all these witch hunts and things like that. Mm-hmm. I think if you look at the context and the historical significance in that era, and then look at how people reacted, I think you get a better picture. I would say, if anything, these comments should spurn you to go do your own research. I think you should never take anyone else's word for it. Go read some books. Go look at the historical problems facing those days, and then put it all in perspective and make up your own mind. I think that's the best way to think about it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I don't think we want to say anything else about that. I think it's just go do your own research.
Fair enough. The other thing that was pretty noteworthy in the last week is the best animated film was announced.
Frozen.
Frozen took the trophy over the other nominated films, which are The Croods and Despicable Me 2.
Yeah, they also, what was it, the Screen Actors Guild Award also got, the Frozen took the award. And there was more awards, more over this, yeah. There was the Miyazaki film, what was that called?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't actually see that.
It was I don't think it's out here yet, but it's the one with about the airplane stuff.
Oh,
there's actually uproar about that one too.
Really? Why?
Well, it's about the guy that invented a lot of the Japanese planes that were used to kill people at Pearl Harbor. Oh. Right? There's like
that's a little.
It's a little close to home.
A little strange.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the difference between? Who awards things? So Golden Globes is made up of who? What body of people? What's the governing body for the Golden Globes?
Golden Globes.
It's like I thought Golden Globes was actors. And the Oscars were kind of like everybody. But then what would that make SAG?
So the Golden Globe is just the Hollywood 93 members of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Oh, okay.
Right.
So it isn't like a very public thing.
No. Okay. The Screen Actors Guild Award is about the biggest guild, so
all gotcha. This,
which is why you get film and TV all voting for it.
Okay.
I think radio is part of that. SAG-AFTRA or something like that.
Okay.
So they're also in that guild. They some union thing merged.
Well, in any case, congratulations to Frozen. I mean, I'm not sure. It sounds like the competition may have been a little bit stiffer in the other category. Did you see Despicable Me 2?
I have not seen Despicable Me.
Did you see the first one? Oh, you haven't seen the first one.
No.
And, you know, that movie had its moments. I don't think it was bad, but
I just I don't think I ever wanted to see it because of the premise. I just wasn't
on board with what's the name
Steve Carell?
The premise of Steve Carell. You're not on board with. Okay, that's fine.
No, I mean it was a story that never really. I never understood from the trailers what the story was about.
Uh-huh.
And so
it's about an evil genius who has a competition with another evil genius. That's basically
the story is about.
That's basically the setup.
It's a story of an evil genius growing a heart.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that's what it essentially is.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I don't know. I saw bits and pieces of the first one.
Uh-huh.
I've never seen the full first one fully through. I've kind of babysat and on like up to the plot to steal the moon.
Okay.
And that's about it. Spoiler alert, there's a plot to steal the moon, but I think that's in the trailer, so
probably. Yeah.
But I got as far as like him loving the girls, but nothing past that.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so I haven't seen Despicable Me 2 myself. I did see The Croods. I like The Croods, but I do feel like that that Frozen does deserve its win.
It is number one in the box office. It's beating everything, and
which is very abnormal.
About a month after it even released, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's like 7 or 8 weeks at this point.
People are seeing it twice in the theaters. Yeah. The it's already pre-sale for DVD on Amazon, and people are going to get it for like $20 in like March.
Mm.
The movie's still out. It's January. Yeah. March, you're going to get the DVD. This is crazy.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. And the other big piece of Frozen news, which surprise, surprise, it's going to become a Broadway musical, which kind of was apparent from the moment that show existed. But yeah, it got some kind of official confirmation, or at least some official hinting that when Bob Iger, CEO of Disney, was questioned. So that's a thing. That's going to happen.
That was a question? Like, we called it before we even saw the movie.
Yeah. So you think it has a shot at the Oscars then? Best animated feature?
What about Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2?
I don't know. What about it?
It's nominated for the Oscars.
Really? Did that movie come out last year?
Yes. The Croods, Despicable Me 2, Epic. Have you seen Epic?
No, I didn't.
Oh, actually, really good. Sweet.
Really?
Yeah, I liked it.
Really? Yeah. But that's where I was in the same boat as you were towards the Despicable Me. I'm like, this doesn't look like it's
good. The only reason I saw it is because my roommate said I wanted to see it, and I happened to be in the same room, and I saw it.
Okay, okay. I mean, if you want to see it, that's fine. I'm just saying.
What about Free Birds?
Oh, yeah, that was nominated? That couldn't have been nominated.
No,
you're crazy.
I'm just listing what is possible.
No, screw that.
How about
Free Birds doesn't have a chance.
I don't know. Let's see if there's any. Oh, A Letter to Momo. I don't know what this is. Yeah, some Japanese
either.
Film. Monsters U? Do you think that has a chance?
No.
Just because Monsters never did well?
I think Monsters U is actually a very good movie, but no, I don't think it deserves. I don't think it will get an Oscar or deserves one.
Okay.
But yeah, let's. I guess let's go back.
There's
to the...
There's also Turbo. And The Wind Rises is the Miyazaki film.
Okay.
And it's his last film. So I don't know.
He retires and comes back from retirement. That guy is going to keep doing stuff. I wouldn't.
No, no. His son is taking over.
Yeah, he says that.
So you mean he's taking over as his son's name?
Yeah. Miyazaki is going to be around. I'm not really worried about that.
Okay.
Anyway, let's talk about the movie at hand that we just saw tonight, The Rescuers Down Under.
You mean the sequel?
Yes, the first Disney sequel, depending on who you ask.
Wait,
first
who
Disney
you asking?
Theatrical release.
No, we had a sequel. Don't you remember? All the way back in like film 6.
No, I don't.
Okay, there's some birds and they dance. It's Donald Duck.
Feature film. Keyword,
yes.
feature film.
It's a feature film.
No,
we're
short.
Only watching feature
no.
films.
No.
We're only watching feature
Doesn't
films.
Doesn't count. We're talking about actual movies.
Look.
not package films.
it's a sequel.
Hey, well, if you want the correct opinion, yeah, this is the first actual sequel to an actual movie, not a travelogue.
Okay, so if you don't count that, mm-hmm. then do we count Fantasia 2000?
No.
Because it's a package film.
I don't think Fantasia 2000 is a sequel either.
So then by all records on, according to this podcast, as the sole, I don't know.
Well, yeah, we're the sole arbiter of this kind of
right.
detail.
So there's two
yeah.
sequels only that exist, officially.
One.
Two.
One.
Winnie the Pooh doesn't count as a sequel?
No.
Got it. So there's only one. Rescuers Down Under.
Yeah, because there's not a continuing... plot. There's not a continuing storyline. Characters exist in the same world.
You mean characters
but...
don't adapt and evolve?
Yeah.
There's no resolution to
right. Winnie the Pooh anything. Happens. The one that came in the 2000s
yes.
happens, and everyone resets. There's nothing that carries over from the movie before, so it's
what
not
do you
a
mean?
Sequel.
Nothing carries over.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
they don't learn
it.
Anything. They don't reference anything. They restart. So it's not a sequel. As far as I'm concerned.
Okay, you heard it here first. According to Gregory, there's only one sequel.
Yes, but semantics aside, we saw the Rescuers Down Under. This movie...
1990. 17 years after the original. Not 17, 13 years.
That's super weird.
1977.
That's really strange. Like, what? I wonder what the conditions in making that call. Like, hey, you know, we had a good movie 10 years ago. Or 15 years ago, let's start developing a new idea based on this franchise.
So it released in 1990. It's got to have at least 3 years of dev time because you got to make a story. And there's a crazy amount of animation on this one.
Right.
So let's say they started in 1987, 1986 for storyboard developing. So 10 years afterwards, they started deciding to make this.
That's crazy. And they even got the original voice actors.
I can't believe they were alive,
That's
to be
crazy.
Honest.
That's crazy.
They were almost dead.
they're the exact same. They have the exact same voices too. Like, well, I guess for Eva Gabor, I guess maybe for both of them, it's not much of a stretch. I don't know. I don't know who the guy was in outside of the film, but yeah, it's weird. Like, I would never have guessed that.
You don't know Bob Newhart?
Bob Newhart
and the Bob Newhart Show.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah.
It's the first time they ever the entire show was a dream, right? The ending of the Bob Newhart Show was he wakes up next to another woman, and the whole show that took place over the last couple of years was a dream.
That's kind of lame,
right? So it's that entire dream thing. It's pretty funny. It's the Bob Newhart Show.
Huh. Okay. Well,
he has multiple shows,
but that's just strange. That's bizarre. Mm-hmm. Why that film? Why The Rescuers?
What else film? Okay, so let's look at that. Mm-hmm. After the last, even let's go back 20 years from now. So back to 1960.
Yeah.
What other film would you make a sequel to? And the answer is up.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it would be anything.
I don't know if they would. You know my opinion. I don't think they should have even made this sequel.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't totally disagree. I don't really feel like The Rescuers really warranted a sequel, but it happened.
But I mean, if you look at it, even the beginning opening theme, right? Mm-hmm. Relative to how The Rescuers opened, Rescuers is a dark film.
Yes,
this is a light film.
This is like the opposite of The Rescuers.
It's the opposite.
This is
animation style.
Yeah,
it's the opposite. Just ambiance. The ambiance here is opening up into a light mood. The ambiance that we open up with the Rescuers is all black.
This is kind of this is like a adventure comedy, whereas the other one was like a drama.
Adventure drama.
Yeah.
Dramedy. This is a dramedy. No,
there's very little comic elements in the original Rescuers, or at least compared to here.
But this one's a dramedy. It's a drama comedy.
Okay. Right. I see what you're saying. Yeah. It's just like a. It's just. The total left turn, but it's just I don't understand how this movie exists to begin with, but I'm really glad it does. I really do like it. But first of all, let's go over what it actually is about. So we have Bianca, the Hungarian diplomat, right?
Correct. And
Bernard,
who's now
janitor,
the U.S. he's the U.S. diplomat.
Yeah, he's now the representative.
So I don't know what happened to the last U.S. diplomat, but he doesn't exist now.
He did have, 17 years, right? So he worked up the ranks. It was the true following of the American dream.
Janitor to diplomat?
Exactly, yeah. Anyway.
You feel like he slept his way to the top.
These two are together now. In a UN, in a what's it called, RAS, the Rescue Aid Society.
Yes.
That is much, much better off than they ever were before. This is like a professional, like
you
legit association.
You commented they're very organized.
Yes, extremely so, compared to the ragtag organization that we saw in The Rescuers. And they've got a distress call from their bureau in Australia.
It's not even a bureau. I think it's like an outpost in Australia that gets relayed to the Marshall Islands.
Yes.
That gets relayed to Hawaii, mm-hmm. onto an army base. That gets
Pearl
relayed
Harbor.
To... You sure it's Pearl Harbor?
I'm sure it's Pearl Harbor.
Okay. You sure? I think so. I don't know.
Moving
on, it's Pearl Harbor.
Uh-huh.
Then it moves on to the rest of the United States, where we don't see anything about how the other mice get along.
Signal gets there. That's the point is, yeah, it gets back to them in New York.
Which is odd because by the time it gets to New York, there's lights of where signals could possibly come from.
Mm-hmm.
Right where you see the mouse, there's a light for Japan.
Uh-huh.
And the light that rings up is Hawaii. Why would it be Hawaii? Hawaii didn't directly send it to New York. Hawaii relayed it through six other stations. Shouldn't it have come from like St. Louis or Chicago?
Oh, you mean that?
It makes no sense. Or should the light have come up from Australia?
I don't know. Maybe there
This is a continuing error that I cannot. I do not like.
Maybe there were other messages.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that wasn't the same message.
It's the same message because that's what they take to the guy.
There could be multiple. It's a busy organization, dude. There are a lot of people working there.
So if a message came directly from Hawaii,
mm-hmm.
then why couldn't the guys from Hawaii directly relay the message?
I don't know.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about this. This is a little...
Is this really what you're hung up on?
No, I am hung up on this
so
at the start. Because...
You're okay with the fact that they're talking animals, but you're not okay with fact.
There's something about... Okay, so when you do world building,
mm-hmm.
if you set the rules, right?
Oh, boy.
Then you have to follow the rules.
Okay.
Once you start breaking the rules, it breaks the world building.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, so the radar was inaccurate. This is like pointing out a lack of contingency in the film and saying, oh, that ruined it because that MacBook is now 90 degrees pointing in the other direction. There's no way that he would be able to read it from his vantage point.
No, this is worse. This is
no, because that's totally ancillary. That doesn't matter. It has absolutely no importance in the film. There's no reason to get hung up on that. The fact is, a message went from Australia to New York. That's all that matters. And there are... It's an establishing shot, right? They're establishing their mice position all around the world. Because this wasn't something that was explained in the first movie because the scope was much smaller. It just happened in Louisiana. Now they're establishing that this is a real functioning organization that actually has outposts everywhere. And here are the different cultures that exist. That are working together to relay this message. So they have a network, right? That's all that they're trying to get across.
Okay, then fine.
The fact that the message comes from Japan or is rerouted through Arizona is completely irrelevant.
Fine. Second thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the Australian diplomat?
I don't know, and it's also irrelevant.
Why? It's an Australia storyline.
Because it's an American film. Dude, the film is filled with Australian stereotypes. Like, chock full of them. The worldview of Australia to the typical American is very limited.
Is the Crocodile Dundee?
Yeah, yeah,
Crocodile Dundee. Well, this is 1990, right? Crocodile Dundee is like the height of its popularity?
Yeah. So it doesn't matter. It could be anywhere in Australia. Australia is just the backdrop for this story, which involves Cody, who is this not rebellious kid, but he's like a kid activist, like he's like an environmentalist. He's going out and he has like his own rucksack and he goes out into the jungle like helping animals.
Jungles are not in Australia. You mean out of the outback?
The outback, yeah,
yeah,
and tries to help. Animals that get themselves trapped or whatever fight poachers. Yes. That's his
MO.
Yeah.
Okay. Fine.
So where he is kind of.
So he doesn't even have to be in Australia.
Not really. Right. Not for so this story.
So from the way it looked like, this story could have taken place in the Grand Canyon.
Sure.
Right? There's no reason for this place to take in Australia.
Sure, and there's no reason it could have taken place in the Grand Canyon. It's just a matter of location. They wanted to make an adventure film, so they take it out of the country.
Got it.
Okay, what's the third problem? Or can we now move away from New York and start moving on with Cody's plot?
Fine. The third problem comes up when we move on to Cody.
Okay, excellent. So Cody is helping, I forget, some animal get this trapped in the tree or something. Oh, a mouse. Who's
this
himself
is after
is
he rescues
bait.
A golden eagle by climbing this crazy cliff.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because it climbs a golden cliff
first. Oh, that's
right,
yeah. What's the name of the eagle?
It's just an eagle. It doesn't give a name.
Yes, it... Dude, they named it... They brought it out like three times.
What is this? Marahoot.
Yes, Marahoot. Right. Which is this giant, like, monstrous bird.
It's a golden eagle that can eat Cody.
Right. That, I guess... How does he get up there in the first
place? He climbs.
He gets a distress... He gets a notice from someone, right?
Kangaroo.
Oh, right. The kangaroo talks to him. Right.
Right.
Because again, just like,
as you said, it was Bambi set in Australia.
Exactly, and they carry that same conceit over from the Wreckers, where there's like one enlightened child who can talk to the animals, and so this guy already has a pre-existing relationship
with
the kangaroo.
It kept the world building. I love that. Yeah. It kept the kids can talk to animals.
Yeah.
Thing. I'm on board with that.
And so Cody goes up to untie the eagle who is trapped in a snare or something like that, right? Something like that, and. And then he rescues her. There's some apprehension, but you know they're showing there's a moment of trust. They're building a relationship, and then they have this flying sequence, which for me, extremely reminiscent of the flying sequences in How to Train Your Dragon. I did not see that until I did not notice that until we saw the movie this time.
I kind of noticed it a little bit,
yeah,
and I was like, well, it's interesting that. Either they're paying homage to this, or that's just how we think about flying sequences.
Maybe. But yeah, it's...
I got a Lion King vibe.
Yeah.
When we do like the panning, and you see
Oh, you mean the very first the opening very first shot opening over shot, the Australian Outback? Yeah.
It was very Lion King-y.
Absolutely.
Over the savannah, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think the parallels to How to Train Your Dragon are clearly there too.
Got
and
it.
I don't think those are accidental because I am reading too much into it, but I know that this is one of Chris Sanders' first jobs at Disney. Chris Sanders at the time was a story artist and a character artist, and he was doing character art for this film. Went on to become a co-director for Lilo and Stitch, and then co-director for How to Train Your Dragon, and
now
then
director.
Solo director for The Croods. So there's, I'm a huge Chris Sanders fan. So
yeah. So do you know what he did in this film?
He did character design.
Yeah. Any particular character design?
Creature design, like mice. I think I don't actually know specifically what.
Okay. I just was wondering if he ever talked about
it. I was hoping you did, baby.
No.
Because I would like to know. Yeah.
Hey, if he hears this podcast, tell him to call us.
If he hears this podcast, I am so sorry.
Hey, we're not reviewing his films.
I'm a big fan, Chris.
Just a shout out. I'll tweet it to Chris.
All right, great. Okay. But so Eagle is saved. He gets trapped by this mouse.
Well, before he gets that, he gets a feather.
You're right. I keep jumping ahead.
And then, basically it is known. Okay, first of all, this bird doesn't speak.
No.
Why does this bird not speak?
Because he's a bird.
No, we have established that birds can speak. Orville can speak.
Not all birds can speak. They don't all speak the same language. There's a language barrier.
There's a language barrier?
Yes, yeah. If there's someone from Vietnam appears in my living room right now, we would have some difficulty communicating to each other in the common language. But with exposure, with time, we would be able to get a point across. I don't think that Cody is literally talking to animals in the movie. I think that's the conceit that they make. They are able to communicate with each other, but the fact that they're speaking English is it's beside the point. The fact is they can read each other. He just met this thing, so he's never had communed with a giant golden eagle before.
So because he's never talked to a golden eagle.
That's why they're not on speaking terms. Exactly.
Okay. Fine. I'll let it go. This is my next biggest problem, was they built a world where certain animals could speak.
Uh-huh.
And you'd assume anyone of that same type of order would speak this would be able to speak to the child.
The same type of bird?
So all birds should be able to speak.
All birds.
Right? Because in the first film they pretty much say that reptiles couldn't speak.
Why? Because he couldn't. Wait, but she talks to the alligators.
No, the alligators do not actually vocalize.
Oh, you're right. They don't talk to her.
They do not talk to her. And in this one you also see when we get to the okay, let's fast forward a little bit.
Well, I guess it's the same thing here, right?
No, because
she talks to the bird, or he talks to the bird.
That's fine.
Yeah.
But the lizard concept was also, I thought, was taken forward and saying that child couldn't speak to lizard.
Uh-huh.
Child could speak to lizard. Lizard could not actually communicate in English back to child.
Oh, but Frank can speak to the kid.
Yes.
Mm.
That broke it. See, this broke the world building,
maybe,
right?
Maybe he talked to the lizards. Lizards of that size are more common, I imagine, than giant golden eagles. So maybe he's encountered them before.
But then he should have been able to speak to, what's her name? The Joanna. Joanna can't speak.
Joanna can't speak to anyone. That's because Joanna is a dog.
Joanna's not a dog.
Yes. Yes, she is. Joanna is not the sharpest tool in the shed.
No, she is not.
But
nor are the crocodiles.
The crocodiles.
Crocodiles.
As they say in Australia.
Crocodiles.
Yes.
Okay,
but,
fine.
But, yeah, we're jumping ahead though, but yeah. I will concede that there is some inconsistency.
Yes.
In terms of who can and who cannot talk. But yeah. If absolutely everything is going to talk, then it becomes a distraction. It becomes a hindrance. It doesn't help
the
plot. I'm
not saying that everything should talk. Uh-huh. But if you're going to make the rules of certain animals can speak, then you should continue those same rules going on to the next film.
Would it have been a better movie if the eagle could talk?
No, I think it's a better movie for the eagle not to talk.
Okay.
I agree. The eagle talking, not talking is a better film because it's all emotionally drawn.
Right.
Perfect. Otherwise, that eagle would have said, my husband got killed by
so
that poster.
It's like the relationship. Okay, the dragons and How to Train Your Dragon cannot talk. But
all the dragons can't talk, which is true.
Yes.
So it's a world building that
makes
sense.
Okay, well, here. All the eagles. I'm going to blow your mind.
There's one eagle.
All the eagles in Australia cannot talk. Because they're actually dragons. Okay. They might as well be dragons. There's one of them. No one's ever seen them before, and this guy's going to kill the rest of them. So, yeah, replace eagle with dragon there.
Got it. And replace plot Australians with Vikings.
Yes.
Got it. Done.
If you really
How
want
to. How to Train Your Dragon 64.
There you go. Done. Yes. So, anyway, after the dragon and Cody do charades, and he goes on this wild journey, he gets caught, trapped down the hole, and they have their first confrontation with someone.
So that mouse that was tied reminded me of Cinderella mice. Just the voice and just like the way it acted.
Uh-huh.
It was just like totally.
Just kind of frilling around and having no purchase on anything and saying, it's a trap.
Yeah. It's totally like this crazy Cinderella mouse.
Yeah. I could see that. Maybe it's, part of the long lineage of.
Right. So Cinderella's mice set up the RAS.
Okay.
And
this
is great.
Yes. There you go. Yeah.
Right.
It's like a Pixar conspiracy where they try to tie together every film in the Pixar library.
And they have.
Came out. I haven't actually looked into it.
They
but
did it in a circular way, actually. It's ridiculous. I'll find the blog post and tweet it. It is insane.
Okay. Excellent. But yeah, there you go. There's your second one. It's the RAS has been really, really been pushing the buttons all this time.
Yeah.
They've been keeping the world from just falling apart.
I'm okay with that. Because one of my favorite books is where mice are actually the second intelligent creatures on Earth.
Okay.
Or
third. Most intelligent?
They're the most intelligent?
Mm.
No, the dolphins are the most intelligent.
Mm. Mm.
I don't remember. Do you remember?
The dolphins?
Yeah. So long and thanks for the fish.
I think the dolphins fly into space, right?
Right.
Because they've had it.
Yes. So does it go dolphins, mice, humans? Or mice, dolphins?
Well, the mice, didn't they build Deep Blue? So then, wouldn't that make them smarter? I don't know. They're somewhere. They're all up there.
Yeah. But the mice were running that. They were basically running Earth as a computer. So the RAS is really just mice running the Earth as a computer.
Yes, but this particular mouse isn't really particularly great at his job. He gets caught and used as bait, which in turn has Cody fall into the giant pit.
Yes.
What do you think he was trying to trap into in the first place? I guess it's
a red kangaroo.
A kangaroo?
Yeah, why not? What else would you trap?
Aren't kangaroos, don't they have like an overpopulation problem? Kangaroos in Australia?
Okay, so something more rare. Tasmanian tiger.
Okay.
Tasmanian devil. Yes. Who knows?
Yeah.
It's Australia.
At either rate, he was really excited about, what's his name? His name, he has such a good name.
Oh, Miss Mick something.
Yes.
McLeach.
McLeach, yes. McLeach comes
Percival over. Percival C. McLeach.
Percival?
Yeah.
Does his first name ever come up? That's a great name.
Yeah, it does come up.
It does?
When he's, so at the end of the film, fast forwarding, when he's almost going, he's like, I beat the crocodiles, and he's falling almost off of the, before he realizes he's going to die.
Right.
Percival C. McLeach has defeated the crocodiles.
That's right. Yeah, so McLeach and his cohort. What's her name?
Luann? Joanna.
Joanna. Joanna's such a good name, too.
She's a goanna.
She's an iguana?
No, goanna.
What's a goanna?
I don't know. I'm looking this up.
It's a big, big lizard.
I thought it was, at first I thought it was either a monotreme, some kind of, or like what was it?
Komodo dragon, said, right?
It's a monitor lizard. Yeah.
It is a monitor lizard.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, but that's what I said.
That's what I just said. Yeah, monitor lizard.
But, yeah, she's awesome. You know what? I think Joanne might be my favorite character in this movie. Because let me take a step back for a second and compare this to The Rescuers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is overall, this is a better movie, and I know I'm jumping like way ahead than The Rescuers was. But They're different. I think the Rescuers is a better animated film. I think there's a lot more nuance. There's a lot more gestural animation and a lot more subtlety to what they're expressing, to what the characters are expressing. This one is on the not quite the opposite spectrum, but it's definitely more exaggerated, much more fluid, much more cartoony. And for characters like Joanna, that's completely on display. Like Joanna is perfect.
I would say Joanna and Wilbur are perfect.
Joanna's like movements, like even in the opening scene when she never takes like the straight path. It's always slithering. You can see like her body weight move at every corner that she takes. She's doing gestures like a dog where she's hopping on 2 feet, but it's really fast and really, really sharp, and it looks amazing. The exaggerated gestural stuff here is just awesome, and Joanna is like the prime display of that for me. But that aside, as you said, she's a non-talking sidekick, and she is basically a dog. She does McLeish's bidding because he keeps her fed, and they sort kind of. He talks to her and kind of babies her. And like he was a pet, and they also are a little bit combative at times. But yeah, so those two come up on Cody. He helps him out. Cody immediately accuses him of being a poacher, which McLeish just kind of slyly says, "Oh yeah, you know." I had nothing to do with that. Until he sees this golden feather in his hand. And is like, where do you get this? You're going to take me to that bird now. And then becomes instantly, you know, turns into this really menacing character. Kind of. He will stop at nothing to get what he wants.
Well, he's a big game hunter.
Yes. Yes. And he takes his job very seriously. And he also drives a lot of joy from it.
Well, he's only very passed happy. The third grade.
Yeah, yeah, but he's proud of that.
Yeah,
that's a big. I think McLeish's character is also really good. I think he's a really good villain. I think I'm gonna jump ahead again because I can't help myself.
As you can clearly see, Dregory loved this film.
I actually do quite like this film. McLeish's plot. You know, the plot of the film isn't amazing. It's really simple and predictable.
It's an environmental film.
But the characters have so much fun just being, you know, they kind of encompass the stereotype. They take their role on like head first. And so like when McLeish has a victory, he dances, he sings, he like totally goes for the moment, and he just relishes that, and that's why I think he is a compelling villain, a compelling character, and a menacing character, because he's doing, you know, he's starting to kill this kid essentially, and in his world that's totally justified. You know, just give me what you want and nothing's gonna happen. So yeah, at any rate, he kidnaps the kid.
Uh-huh.
And then we break to the rats. To the mice.
To Bernard is about to propose.
Yes.
To Bianca.
Mm-hmm.
But he's scared. Well, he's not scared. He loses the ring. It's Bernard.
He is scared. He's going to do it anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But he's scared.
Yeah. But he's also a klutz.
Yeah. And he thinks he... Basically, there's a lot of misunderstandings. Normal comic relief.
Uh-huh.
And it ends up being that rather than Bianca thinks, they think that they're talking about the same thing. But Bianca's really talking about rescuing this boy in Australia. And Bernard is talking about proposing, but they're not on the same page.
Right.
And suddenly they're on their way to Australia.
Yes.
Basically, that's what that sequence is. Yeah. Nothing too exciting happens in that. There's an interesting plot hole, but I will not say anything about it. It's so minute.
Oh, please do tell. Let's squash this one too.
It's not a plot hole. It's just this concept that doesn't make sense to me.
Okay.
So they're in this nice restaurant.
Yes.
They're going to make pea soup, these crickets or cockroaches or whatever.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of bugs. And the pea gets put into a thimble.
Yes.
Thimbles have holes.
Yes.
How do you make soup in a thimble?
Okay. How much soup do you think is served to a mouse in a bowl?
None.
How much liquid do you think would be encased in a thimble to begin with? It's going to be like a droplet.
Yeah, but then the droplet can...
And have you had pea soup? The density of a soup like that, it will stay together.
The cohesion?
Exactly. I think we have to test this out.
Mythbusters, I think we have a lot of things for you to test out. First of all, pea soup in a thimble.
Yes.
I have another one coming up, but that's the end of the film.
I can't wait. So, yes, they meet Wilbur. Orville is suddenly out of the picture.
I think the voice actor didn't want to come back.
So
they had to create
him. So they brought in, what's his name again? John Candy.
Yeah. The big fat man, John Candy.
Yeah, and he becomes like the umpteenth cartoon comic relief in the film.
Yes.
And eventually transports, like you said, they go to Australia. They go to Sydney by the back of another plane.
Yeah, and not another bird, yes, which would have been a little bit more interesting. I would have liked them to like try to traverse like albatross to this other thing,
yeah,
to this other thing. Like, I think that would have been a cooler thing than other than, oh, let's go fly on a plane.
Yeah, but they had to get there quickly, and no bird's gonna fly faster than
than a plane.
Than a plane. Yeah, because you know if they get there, you know, a couple months after, probably would have done so well for company. I think the more interesting question that I raised while we were watching is, why aren't they sending diplomats to begin with? Like, there has to be somewhere, some group closer to Australia that has some actionable power or force over that. Why are you sending the Hungarian representative and the janitor to
go rescue
a kid?
Which is my question from the beginning. Where's the Australian representative?
Yeah.
Right?
That is a little strange, but that's, you know, that's just one of the consistency.
I'm okay with them
uh-huh.
providing the Hungarian and Bernard because they're the best guys. They knew how to.
Yes,
right. Okay. I'm fine with them traveling. With them. I'm okay with that plot hole.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. I'll make that fit. But there is no delegate from Australia meeting them there. Right? They can traverse from all the way Australia to give a signal all the way back to New York to mm-hmm. saying that we need help, but they couldn't tell you help is on the way.
Right. Well, there's like a self-assigned delegate, right? Jake becomes kind of he enlists himself in the service of the RAS.
Yes.
Well, more specifically of Bianca. But yeah, indirectly. Indirectly, he contributes to the
But
overall.
There could have been an RAS contingent meeting them there. We saw them. They existed.
Sure. I think, though, one of the stranger things about this film is, you know, There are three simultaneous like plots or subplots happening at the same time. Some of them are pretty minuscule, like the one involving Wilbur kind of getting put out of action for picking up the mouse's suitcase immediately after he lands and then, you know, disappearing from the film is mostly there to say, oh yeah, yeah, they can't go to Cody because they can't fly. That I understand. But they switch back between Bianca and Bernard's and Jake's journey to get to Cody, which happens, takes almost the entire time of the movie.
The entire movie is them trying to get to Jake.
And Cody trying to get himself out.
Yeah.
and then Wilbur just trying. And
Jake is a kangaroo mouse, by the way.
That makes sense. So I was like, why is he hopping?
Because he's
Australian. I get that, but not Australians. Not all Australians hop. So okay, interesting. Yeah, that's cool. I like movies with a lot of. I like the fact that this is set in Australia. I like that there are a lot of creatures and they paid attention to the nuances of the different creatures. I like that they're animated differently and they share characteristics that you would associate with them. That in any film, if you do that, you automatically get bonus points from me.
For portraying animals correctly?
For that level of attention to detail.
So you would say the levels of dragons in How to Train Your Dragons were very accurately portrayed?
Very, yes. Based on my experience with dragons, yes, I can attest to their accuracy. Absolutely.
I did like the fact that it was a kangaroo mouse.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, do kangaroo mouse not belong to the RAS? Is there discrimination there?
Maybe there is. I don't know. Maybe there is a...
Because they're not actually kangaroos, past. So they are mice.
They are mice.
They are truly mice.
They're rodents, so maybe? I don't know. What's the jurisdiction of the RAS?
I don't know.
Does it only extend to rodents? Or is it only mice and also small children? Or is it anyone? Is it anyone that helps or hinders? It's unclear. It's okay. Unclear.
It's unclear what the RAS is.
Yes.
More research needs to be done. Yes. Or if anyone knows what this RAS is and would like to comment, please call us at da 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 da.
Got it.
It's just then, yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, anyway. So there are three subplots happening at this point.
Really, there's two. I think the subplot C, which is really talking about Wilbur, is not really a major subplot, I would say.
It isn't.
It's like...
Wilbur's trying to escape.
It's half a scene here, it's half a scene there,
and
nothing
it,
big.
Yeah, you're right. That's all about explaining, hey, what happened to Wilbur?
Right. Every time you're like, why couldn't they do this faster? Where's Wilbur?
Exactly.
Basically, it's like...
But they always make that cut. They always like, we're going to go from here to here. There's always going to be a Wilbur transition. Yeah. So they stick to it.
Yeah.
They're faithful to their own...
I did like the Wilbur transitions.
Yeah.
I could have done without Wilbur, actually.
Oh, no. John Candy's great. He
was John Candy.
He's John Candy.
Let me put it this way.
Same
there was no... But... Out of the famous people that are on this film, no one acted like they normally would in another film.
Yeah, you're
which
right.
Which is
everyone
odd,
was typecast.
Right? It was just tight. Yeah. It was just like, John Candy is John Candy.
Yeah.
And then you're playing Ava Gabor's the... Fancy lady.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Newhart is Bob Newhart. He's not even playing anyone else. He's playing Bob Newhart. Right?
No, it is a little strange, though. In defense of Wilbur, he is in this overturned medical bus in the middle of a field. And they have, they're equipped to handle animals like him. It's unclear why they're handling him in the first place. And why they have a giant patient escape sign
The reason that they're handling him is because he threw out his back.
Yes. Right. Well, yes, but why? Why do they care?
They are part of
they're part of the RAS?
No, they're part of the medical on staff for the landing the airport.
Okay.
Second of all, those mice all had black eyes that are the nurses.
Yeah.
They look dead.
Yeah.
They look like zombie mice.
Black beady eyes.
Like, I was like, oh my god, they're gonna kill Wilbur.
I didn't notice that, but you're absolutely.
I did notice that, but I didn't. It was so creepy. Yeah. I felt like it was like Dr. Frankenstein. And they're going to resurrect Wilbur.
Absolutely.
As this crazy,
there was a big like Gulliver's Island sequence where they're luring this, mammoth bird. And he's like, I think his panic was totally justified.
I think he could have died.
He wakes up with a vice on his head. Yeah. And you have this German.
He was totally Dr. Frankenstein.
Yeah. That was I found that entertaining, even if it had nothing to do with anything. it was a pretty decent diversion. So while he's doing, go ahead.
So the portrayal of the villain, just to give you perspective on who played him, is George Campbell Scott, who was Patton.
What, really?
He was Patton.
That was him.
He played Patton.
Oh, I didn't know that, actually, because I have a friend who really likes that movie.
Patton is a great movie. I love Patton.
I don't think I've actually seen it.
You've not seen Patton?
No.
Oh, it's a great film. It's a long film, but it's a great film.
Yeah?
Yeah. It's a great thing about, the African campaign of World War II. That's Patton.
I probably do need to see that at some point.
But yeah, so there's another... So this is another famous guy.
At any rate, he's really good.
Yeah, well, they got a good... person.
Yeah.
I don't know who this Australian actor is. He seems like just an Australian guy.
Mm.
Oh, he was on The Young and the Restless.
No, but okay. As an Australian guy?
Yeah, no, he's an Australian guy character on The Young and the Restless.
Gotcha.
All right, so where were we? Still the plots.
Oh, so we just said Wilbur's plot was kind of insignificant, if entertaining.
And then we have the two major plots. Plot A, which is Jake...
not Jake. Why do I want to say Jake?
Jake, Bianca, and Bernard?
No. Oh, yeah. I want to say Jake because I always think Jake is the kid.
The kid. Yeah.
And Cody would be...
Right.
So, Cody is basically fending for himself. And at this point, he's trapped and he's basically being held captive until he tells where this giant eagle is, nest is.
So he's in the lair, basically, of what was his name? McLeach. And is that, you think that's like his temporary digs or, no, that's like, he that's has like a freaking fortress.
Yeah, it's his house.
It's just like a cave.
Yeah, it's a man cave. Where he stores animals. And he has a lot of animals in there. So he has a kangaroo, which... If you're looking at rare things, why he has a kangaroo?
That, yeah, that is a little strange. You just have a
he has full a koala. Size...
Yeah,
he has a platypus. He has things that are just normal creatures in Australia.
Yes. Well, yeah, he has a cornucopia of Australian animals.
And what was that lizard card? The one that looks like it's from Jurassic Park.
Oh, I actually don't know. Frank? I don't know what Frank was.
Frill-necked lizard.
Of course. Yeah, he's a stupid one. He's the other comic relief. That's not John Candy.
This movie is just all Candy comic relief. Who is actually playing it straight? Two. I would put two people played this.
Two people?
Yeah.
McLeach?
Yeah.
Cody?
And Cody. There's only two people that played this.
And Bianca, maybe.
No, Bianca is comic relief. Well, Bianca is eye candy.
I guess so.
She's actually just there to play Frank off of.
Yes.
Right? Absolutely. I mean, it's just like
to create conflict.
It's just a conflict creator. Like this movie could have been if Frank wasn't there, Bianca wouldn't be as useful, I think.
But yeah, that's important because it makes you sympathize sympathize with Bernard, his plight and his inability to ever get what he wants.
He does at the end. But spoilers. Yes. He gets.
Well, he saves the day. Ultimately, even if he isn't really the hero, he's billed as the hero, and so that's enough. But yeah, Bernard's a pretty good character too. They're all pretty good.
Nice.
I think each one has a very distinct personality that they subscribe to, and it plays out in the end. But yeah, so. Anyway, he convenes with his animals, including this really, really kind of sarcastic, cynical koala, who might have been my favorite character in that particular scene.
The koala's like, right, come on, man, what are you talking about?
He hates everything. He hates the comic relief. He tells everyone that they're going to be made into, like, purses and shoes. And he says it so glibly and with joy. Like, he kind of, like, models off. The person that this lizard is going to be.
Yeah.
He's pretty funny.
Yeah, that's the only way they're going to get out of there, right?
Yes. And you know, koalas are naturally grouchy animals, right? Like, they like to live alone. So it's not too far from what you might think it would be in some kind of extent.
I love this plot of trying to get these keys. And.
Yeah. Yeah, they devise a plan to kind of hand off each other the keys, and Frank ruins it for everybody.
Yeah. The comic relief.
Yes.
Bum, 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 bum.
Exactly. But, so...
They succeed in the end.
Mm-hmm. And then... Oh, yeah. No, you know what? What's his name? McLeach also has a scene, a very long scene, where he's fighting with his lizard, with Joanne.
Yeah.
Over these eggs. Which is an interesting way to... You don't really have shots like that in animation.
No. I don't think. Like, extended shots. It's very weird.
Where you have exposition and also... Some physical slapstick humor.
Slapstick comedy?
That's very unusual in animated film. At least in my memory. I don't think we've seen anything like that before. I think it's pretty good. It's pretty simplistic. But it kind of reinforces the
dog relationship?
Yes. And kind of their not competition. Some animosity between the two.
But they know they can't survive without each other.
One way animosity. Yeah, 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 exactly. So that was endearing in a way. But yeah, ultimately during the scene.
By the way,
yes,
I was wrong. Apparently, Jake is the RAS local regional operative.
Really?
Not really explicit. Well, according to Wikipedia.
I don't think that is explained.
No. According to Wikipedia, that's what...
I guess that would make sense why he would know then, but...
No. Yeah.
Because he's like, oh, you know, everybody knows, but he's just being... trying to be impressive. Because they didn't recognize him. But...
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah. Huh. Interesting.
I'm really confused. But sure, get back. I didn't see it. I must have missed it. It must have been...
No, I don't think it happened, dude. I don't think it was explained. I think maybe that it just kind of slipped
out. You mean Wikipedia is wrong?
No. Wikipedia can't be wrong. That doesn't happen.
You know, Wikipedia is 13 years old.
Happy birthday, Wikipedia.
I know. Congratulations, Wikipedia. Everyone goes to you for all your answers.
Oh, Wikipedia is so old.
Wikipedia is so old.
Yeah. Anyway, so... Wait, it's 13 years old?
Yeah.
What year? 2014?
Yeah.
2001?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, I know.
So, yeah, Wikipedia. Jake, what were we talking about? Lizards.
Lizards.
Yes. Joanne. Right.
Joanne. And McLeach.
McLeach. Get in their giant monster truck with a huge cage to carry Cody and... Oh, no. They let Cody go, right?
Basically, McLeach has this brilliant plan because he's passed the third grade.
Yes.
Saying, I'm just putting this out there. Yes. This is exactly what he said. Hey, you know what? Actually, I don't need you anymore because someone actually killed that stupid bird. Mm-hmm. And just because you didn't let me kill it, useless. You're no use to me.
Yes.
And bye.
Yeah.
And stupid Cody just runs off to the bird.
Yeah.
Well, he actually runs off to the eggs.
Yeah.
Right? Because basically the guy says, oh, poor eggs. There's no one to take care of them. They'll die. And he's like, ha 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 ha. This guy will go to the eggs. I will find the nest. I will kill the bird. Yeah. I will do everything. So that's what happens.
Yes. And so he leads them right to the bird, which he takes out with a rocket launcher.
It's this crazy rocket launcher that goes into this crazy knapsack or like cloth bag type thing that wraps around because it has like
weights
around it and it just wraps around the bird.
That's how it's done.
Dude. Where? Well, who does this? I've never seen this ever.
Anyone that hunts large birds or dragons is going to use
a catapult. Is this how they hunt dragons in How to Train Your Dragons?
I think they use more menacing weapons, but they're not trying to capture dragons.
Yeah, but going forward, they are.
Yeah, but that's somebody else's problem. Well, you know what? Now that I think about it, maybe they do. Yes, in the very beginning, when the hiccup is in that workshop with Craig Ferguson.
Right. You just have to say it's Craig Ferguson. His dad.
Yeah. No, it's not his dad. It's his...
Uncle,
I guess.
The guy almost died, like no arms, no legs.
He's building this catapult device that does exactly the same thing. So, yes, it's not prior establishment. It's kind of reinforced. He just lifted the idea from his own movie, is what happened.
He's like, I like the bird.
Yes.
I like the kid riding a bird.
He established a precedent here, and he's like, oh, well, it happened there. That's how it's done.
And it's okay because it happened in a Disney movie.
Yeah.
So it has to be true.
So it's canonical. Yes, absolutely. So there you go. Yes. I don't know. I don't know how you would otherwise catch a bird.
I don't know. The guy from Up didn't catch birds like this. And those are big, large birds.
Yeah, but those were ground animals. This is a bird that can fly.
Oh.
The guy from Carlton caught a chicken, basically. A peacock. An ostrich.
Peacocks can fly.
An ostrich.
Chickens can fly.
No, they not really.
Yes, they can.
Not any distance. Chickens can fly.
They can fly.
Chickens can fall. Chickens can fall. This bird can move if you try to hit it, which is why it had to be a rocket launcher. Yeah.
I don't believe that this would work. I want someone to test this. Mythbusters, test it.
I think there would be some problems with that with certain animal rights organizations.
Why? You don't have to catch an actual bird.
Oh, well then, yeah, that should be easy.
Why?
I think that would work, sure.
I don't think it would. How would it work?
Surely there has to be some kind of net projection system.
So you shoot it out.
Yes.
And then it collapses on itself.
Yes.
I don't think that would work in the air.
Really?
I don't think so.
I don't know. That seemed to work here.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know how that... Like, was it a metallic shell?
I don't know. It looked like it wasn't a metallic shell. It just looked all cloth.
It's like a parachute, though. You're shooting it out. The weight is all around the corner. So, yeah, of course it's going to be slowed down. That will go around. It probably won't wrap around each other unless they have, like, fins so that it would force the air to move in circular fashion as it's going around. But maybe those have to be activated after it's actually pushed out to the fore. Yeah, I don't know. Let's give it a shot. Hey, there's my next project.
Our next project?
Yes. Come to the conclusion of Two Guys Without a Clue. We're going to start recreating scenes
from the movie?
Just the animated films.
I'm going to pass on that one. You got to find your new host.
All right. All right.
We have a lot of guests.
Additions now. Find the next cat to die cat.
Oh, you can't take my handle. That's my handle.
I suppose you're right. All right. You're not replaceable.
I am not replaceable.
But yeah, so he fires the cannon at
they catch the bird. But not only they catch the bird, at this point we have Cody who jumps on somehow jumps and catches this knapsack, which is fine. Okay, he does that. He's a great athlete.
Yes.
And then only two of the mice latch on. That would be the wrong mice that you would think the mouse that you think couldn't do anything is left behind, Bernard.
Yes. Makes sense. Bernard's not having a good time.
Bernard does not like Australia.
Yeah, no.
He would like to leave.
Yeah.
Or get rid of this other dude.
Which is, I think his composure has improved since his time in New Orleans, was it? In Louisiana?
Yeah.
Where he just was like a sourpuss. He hated everything.
Yeah.
Here, he's definitely more open to experiences, but he's also really very much like this tourist kind of character. It's like, this isn't what I was signed up for. So yeah, he's trying, but he's just not very.
Nah, he's not very good. So basically, all of those four characters, every character except Bernard, gets captured.
Yes.
At this point, the McLeach says, "Hey, you go eat this, Joanna. Go eat those eggs."
Mm-hmm.
Joanna goes down to scared as first of heights and stuff, but somehow gets down there with some pulley repel system.
Yeah.
And tries to eat the eggs. Mm-hmm. They can't, apparently not edible now.
Yeah.
And scratches them and then decides to throw them off and say, "I ate them." Done.
Yeah.
They got rid of somehow. All unbeknownst to to anyone is actually hidden by Bernard, those eggs.
Mm-hmm.
It's at this point that we see the return of Wilbur at the nick of time.
Yes. Wilbur comes back
to sit on the eggs.
And that is
not that there needed to be sitting on these eggs. There could have easily have been Wilbur flying this guy.
Yes.
From Bernard to rescue. Well, right?
Someone has to keep the eggs alive, right? Keep them warm. They have to be incubated.
They're allowed to be kept warm. This eagle is flying all over the place going to get food and stuff. It's viable to keep the eggs not warm for like 10 minutes. Right? The amount of time it would take Wilbur to go fly and catch up to this thing would have been 10 minutes to rescue this
thing. The kind of guy that likes to play things safe, okay? He doesn't know if he's going to be back in, 10 minutes or ever. Exactly. So he's just doing what he can.
Or he knows that Wilbur can't really do anything.
That may also be part of the equation. He's like, "I've got to get this guy out of the picture because he's just going to be a menace."
He's like, "I remember how Orville was when he tried to help us with this thing. He wasn't very much of
a help." Or maybe he's just sympathetic towards Wilbur. He just saw this other bird get shot down with a rocket launcher. He doesn't want him to suffer the same fate because he's just right out of there. Maybe he's being selfish. See, there are a number of possibilities.
Okay. Well, some point, you got this mouse trying to track down this crazy tank thing that's traveling, I don't know, what would you say, 10 miles per hour?
It's, yeah.
Right? It's slow, but it's not fast. It
probably gets terrible mileage.
Oh, I think it gets great gas mileage.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it probably runs off of...
it's a hybrid.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, I thought it would just run off of animal power, like kangaroos jumping or something.
Like that. Probably underneath the hood, yes.
Yeah. It's just kangaroos and koalas.
That's why he keeps them in his cave.
Yeah. To power that truck.
Mm-hmm.
And so the rest of the film is just, I think, an easy...
The rest of the film is like, yeah, let's end it.
Yeah, basically it's just like, okay, we're done.
McLeach gets too cocky and gets... I don't really understand. He trips or something and gets pushed off. Kind of, it's like the unsatisfying conclusion that we had, like, in, what is it, Sleeping Beauty, maybe, where Maleficent falls down.
Yeah.
Except here, Bernard is next to Maleficent, and it's like, boop, there you go.
Yeah. But it didn't have to, Bernard didn't have to be there. I think the guy was going to fall anyways.
But yeah, he was there to get the final hit in and be declared a hero.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, immediately after that, he proposes to Beyonce.
Did you know Beyonce was in this film? I didn't. This was way before she was a hit on Disney's Child.
Yeah, well, you know, you have to start somewhere.
You heard it here first. Beyonce, Destiny's Child, yeah. Ava Gabor.
You're going to have to finish my thought.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And so we ride off into the sunset. Basically, that's what happens with the proposal that's correct.
Precisely.
No way of getting back to the main.
And, yeah, Wilbur gets stranded, and they have no way to leave, and that's why we never see them
again. The chicks get bored, and they start biting Wilbur. That's the end of the film.
That's right. Yeah.
So one thing to say, there's a lot of CG.
Yeah,
and
there's a lot. It's not doesn't all hold up.
No, it doesn't.
It's just not all hold
the
up.
The car scenes. Yeah. There's like three cars that get like in this snowstorm after Wilbur's taking off. They look like someone's first cut of like models.
Yeah.
It's not like they tried. They just made four blocks and put some dots of lights on it.
Yeah, but you know that was it, man. You know that's what they got to work with.
But. I don't know. Because there are other cars that they have made that looked a lot more car-like.
Oh, you mean like the DeSoto?
Yeah.
Oh, but you see how much time they spent showing that DeSoto?
None.
In Oliver and Company?
Yeah.
Dude, they have like these big panning shots and you have this skewed perspective angle from the bottom of the dock looking up at
it. Yeah, okay.
that DeSoto is a character unto itself. Here, they're just like, things they hope you don't look at too closely. Either that, or they're like, holy crap, we have CG in this movie. Look at that.
Oh, that's
could have gone either
there's
way.
This one building scene.
Yeah.
Is it New York or something? They're panning to New York.
Yeah,
when
the big first zoom in from New York, flyover from New York.
Looks terrible.
It's not hot, but...
But to me, that scene, it makes... I'm wondering, is there a reason why they made that CG... Rather than just taking from the first film where they already had a very similar shot, right? They could have easily just taken the same shot.
I think, like you mentioned earlier, it's just tonally, just entirely different.
Yeah,
that's too dramatic. Too like the backgrounds in The Rescuers were much more realistic, but with a more somber, a darker.
They're
edge
blue.
To
they're all in blue hue. So they all had a blue hue and nothing else. The light aspect was very tiny. Any yellows and any reds were self-contained to lighting parts like fires and things like that. But everything else was blue hued.
Did the Rescuers take? I wasn't entirely clear on it. The Rescuers took place in present day. Right when it was
in 1977, I think it's felt like that. Yes.
Yeah, because this one feels a lot more modern, and I guess that is because it was. But yeah, I mean, like the shift between the two films, it's like, I don't know. Maybe it's because I grew up in that period. when after this film came out, but it seems much more relatable. The other one just seems like a distant, like a. Vision of the past is like this is romanticized.
The other one could have been a real film, put into animation.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
right.
I guess you're right. That
real film is saying something different. That could have been a much more. If you took all of the characters and just made them human, then that would have been a very somber, realistic look. At maybe helping a kid who was kidnapped. A detective film. It was a pure detective novel. Oh. It's not a film noir, but a detective type story.
Okay.
This one is totally just this comedy drama. Right? This is slapstick John Candy comedy goals.
Hold on to your pants, yes.
Right. Welcome to... Right? I mean, this is like Home Alone.
Yeah. Right? Tonally, yes. Absolutely.
Right. It's totally like Home Alone, which ironically was released the same weekend as this film.
Really?
And that's why this film bombed.
Oh, did it bomb?
Oh, yeah. They pulled, Katzenberg pulled all the TV ads for this film.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yeah, it totally bombed. Its opening weekend was like 3 point something. Let me see. 3.5 million. Only. Fourth in the opening weekend after Home Alone, Rocky V, and Child Plays 2.
Huh.
And way below studio's expectation.
Uh-huh.
It only took in 47 million overall.
Interesting. And, yeah, but I mean... Yeah, I don't know. Because as we established in the last podcast, when we covered The Rescuers, that movie actually did really well, right?
Yes, that's why they would make
a sequel.
Which
I guess is why the only reason that would make sense for the making a sequel to it. But yeah, that's... I guess I'm not shocked. Like, do you think you would have an audience, you know, really wanting to see a sequel for that movie in the first place? But if the first
that
movie
audience
has an audience, yeah.
But that audience is grown up. That's 13 years.
Yeah.
That's 2 generations of kids.
I guess the idea is, yeah, at that point, you're going to take your kid to go see it because you enjoy the original franchise. But apparently that didn't play out.
But, I mean, how would that work with something else? Let's say, is there any other film that we've had to... So Toy Story is another one that had a long gap between Toy Story 1 and Toy Story 2. How many was that? How much was that gap?
Toy Story came out in what, 99 maybe?
Toy Story came out,
was it 98?
I don't know. No, 95?
Was it that early?
95. Toy Story is in 1995. Yeah. Toy Story 2,
wow,
came out in 1999. Okay, that's fine. Toy Story 3 didn't come out till last year or 2 years ago, right?
2 years ago, yeah.
So that's
yeah, that's a big gap.
The same gap.
Yeah. But,
Right?
I think it's, yeah, it's kind of hard to explain because Toy Story kind of has universal appeal. It's like not, I wouldn't call it my favorite Pixar film by a long
Toy
stretch,
Story or
but,
any of the Toy Story films.
The franchise in general. Okay. I like it, but... I feel like people generally love that film. People are a lot more passionate about it than... Like when you think Pixar, you think of that film. And maybe that's simply why. Because at the time, it was mind-blowing.
Right?
I don't... Do you think The Rescuers commanded that kind of attention or recognition or loyalty? Maybe that was the difference. Because Toy Story had universal appeal, essentially universal appeal. They established themselves as a movie studio that could make movies for all audiences. Whereas I don't know if that rang true for Disney. It could have, but I don't know.
I don't know, but it's definitely. I will say this: I had the same problem with Toy Story 3 that I do with this.
Oh, that's right. You don't like Toy Story 3.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So that. Yeah, you really are in the minority there.
Basically, I am the anti guy that likes movies.
I don't think Toy Story. I like Toy Story 3. I didn't think it was. Same as with Toy Story. Like, for its time, Toy Story was absolutely mind blowing. But in 2014, I don't think it's their best film by a long shot. But people, you know, when Toy Story 3 came out, people just went crazy. It's like this is the second coming to Christ,
right?
So I'm like, it was good. It was good, but it's the same story,
right? So it's the same. So let's say, but that did very well in the box office.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Because people have that attachment to it.
So you think people just didn't have the same attachment level?
Purely speculation, but based on my impression of The Rescuers, yeah,
yeah, it's a very. Out of the
like I said,
Disney
I don't understand readiness. How this film got made in the first. It made money, so we established why it got made.
Yeah,
but still, yeah, it's
we also it's established that out of all the Disney Renaissance films, this basically is the oddball out. It is one that's obscure, that you don't find very often in being played on TV.
How long did the Disney Renaissance last?
I would say from 1989, 1988 to 1999.
What was the last film in the Disney Renaissance?
The Second Coming Renaissance?
The first. The first Disney Renaissance.
The first Disney Renaissance.
Yeah, so we're at... What was last... The last movie was... Little Mermaid. Yes. And then
we go on to this movie.
The Rescuers Down Under. Then we have
The Beauty and the Beast.
Beauty and the Beast, The Lion King, yes. Right? Holy crap, that's coming up soon. and then Pocahontas.
Yeah.
And then The Hunchback. Is The Hunchback somewhere in there?
1998 is The Hunchback of Notre Dame. So I think...
Where is
Mulan
Hercules?
Comes before that. Hercules and Mulan come roughly right before that.
Okay. I would say Hunchback is also probably...
Yeah, 1989 to 1999, Disney Renaissance.
Okay.
The Renaissance era, 1989 to 2000.
And so the last movie would have been, you said, Mulan?
Pocahontas is 95. The last one... I don't know. I'm having a problem with this. Notre Dame is 1996. Hercules is 97. Mulan is 98. Tarzan? Tarzan is the last one.
Tarzan gets included?
Okay. Yeah, Tarzan's 99.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, because Fantasia 2000 kicks off the next post-Renaissance.
That marks the... Oh, I see. Okay.
According to this Wikipedia, yes. I mean, I could arguably say that the Renaissance actually probably goes up till the Emperor's New Groove. Mm. I say like Atlantis.
If that happens, then we're including movies like Atlantis and Treasure Island and the cat movie with Roseanne.
Those come after.
Home on the Range.
Those come after the Emperor's New Groove.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah. So yeah. I would say Emperor's New Groove is great, and then you get this crazy Atlantis.
What about Brother Bear?
That comes after. They're all after.
Okay.
So I think arguably, you can move it back and forth. I think I would say Fantasia 2000 would count.
Okay.
But and you possibly can go up to Emperor's New Groove because those are all good films.
Yeah.
And then you hit a drought.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think. I guess that kind of sums up our thoughts on... But is there anything else you want to say about...
So look at this. If I'm looking at the ratings on Rotten Tomatoes, this got a 68% rating on Rotten Tomatoes with only 25 reviews.
Huh.
The other lowest grossing one out of this entire renaissance is Pocahontas at 56%.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So... Let's see how that goes.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to... I personally didn't like this film. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay. I do like the tonal change, but I think it's just a different movie. It could have taken place with different characters. Does that make sense?
Okay.
Right, we didn't have to continue the Bernard and...
Okay, so you didn't like those characters.
I don't mind those characters, but I like the characters better suited for the dark times that they were in, which was...
So you're saying you like the themes of the Rescuers better?
I like comparing these two together, and I thought I said in the Rescuers podcast that I saw this movie.
Uh-huh.
I've actually never seen this movie fully. The only scene I've ever seen is the takeoff of Wilbur in the snow.
Oh, okay.
That's the only part of this movie.
Yeah, pretty early on. Okay.
Totally wrong.
Yeah.
I would say comparing the apples to apples, these two movies, for the characters that they were depicted, I think the Rescuers is a better film. For those characters.
Hmm, okay.
I think this doesn't showcase... It fails to showcase Bianca.
Uh-huh.
And I think that's the problem. I think this basically takes a more male-oriented view to the film. The last one is a female-oriented film. I think overall that's a better film.
Okay. Because it is a female-oriented film. Or you just wanted the movie more about Bianca?
I think Bianca is the more main character. I think Bernard is an incidental character that took... it is being showed the ropes. In the first film, he is definitely our eyes and ears. He's showing us the world. He's the world-building glass, right?
Oh, I see. Okay. Right? Okay, yeah.
I think they could have gone with that forward and had Bernard be the leader here.
Right.
And then let Bianca go.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't.
Okay.
And so I think they just threw in the two characters into this film, which could have been any other characters.
Right. Okay.
And so I don't like, I think it, for that reason, this is not a, as good of a film.
Okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would have to say I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum. This is probably one of my favorite Disney films, period. And part of that is because I come in with this with a lot of bias, because this is something I watched a lot as a child.
You watched this more?
I was like the primary demo for this movie when it came out, and I ate this stuff up. So yeah, I like this a lot. Even despite its shortcomings, even with its faults, I know it follows certain tropes that I actually absolutely hate.
Like what? Can you name one?
I don't like pure evil characters. For instance, I don't like characters that are bad for the sake of being bad. I like villains that have death. That
so you like gray villains, right?
Yeah,
villains that if you looked at it a different perspective, they could be doing the right thing.
Yeah,
it just happens in this world they're wrong.
Yeah,
right. In this situation they're wrong. Mm-hmm.
So he reminds me a little bit of kind of the reason why I have issues with Avatar. The general in charge of that, you know, the private military operation.
Oh yeah,
he was just really intolerable for me for the same reason.
That film was intolerable for me. I would never want to watch that film ever again.
I think parts of the film, that's the kind of film where I start watching it and I do not stop.
Really?
Yeah.
I can walk away from that film anytime it's on. I think the best part of that film is on mute.
Yeah,
like no. I could see if I just watched the visual aspects of parts of that film, uh-huh. Great.
Yeah,
but I mean, speaking of that film, they're making a world at Disneyland.
Yeah, yeah, I know. They just broke ground on Animal Kingdom Park.
I do not want to go to that.
But yeah, the main problem I had with that movie was it was just too black and white, and that villain was too one dimensional. The villain here is also pretty one dimensional, but he's just so much more alive. Like. He's so much easier to sympathize for. He seems more human than the human character in Avatar. And that's why I think he didn't irk me quite as much. But otherwise, that's something that I really dislike.
I wasn't irked by this character, but I also wasn't drawn in. I agree with you. I think the trope of him being a cut-and-go villain is just... I think it's part of Disney's formula. Like, I think they get away with it because...
Yeah, it is.
So they don't spend as much time developing the villains, because it's not one of the best villains. We've said that one of the better villains is Cruella de Vil.
Yeah,
right. There's actually humanism to her, right? You can kind of sympathize with her in some way.
Uh-huh. The other things that kind of draw me into this world is I like stories where they take a different take on the world. I like the different perspective that you get when you look at the world from the eyes of a dog. From a mouse, and ordinary objects become like these gigantic obstacles. I like the thought process and what they have to do to explain, you know, how conventions work in this world. That part of, I don't know if you would call it world building, but the way that they flesh that out and explain it, I think is
building.
Really...
It's a great perspective building.
Okay.
I think I like that too. There's definitely a lot of books that do that well. I think we discussed this before.
Uh-huh.
I definitely agree that that's a lot of what movies should be about, and I don't think we've touched upon this to now, and I think it's a great time in 2014 to do more of this kind of movie, speak more from a movie perspective, is that the point of a movie is to provide a different perspective to your everyday life, and a lot of these animated films help that. They turn the world on its edge.
Right.
You go through a world of an animal. You go through a world of looking at a kid's perspective or someone on an alien planet or something totally different. And that's the point. It's supposed to somehow relate to what you do now, but provide you a different outlook so you come out thinking a little bit more.
Uh-huh.
And I think you're right. I think these are good. I don't know if this is the best example of that film, but I think it does that well enough.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that's a very salient point. And... I also really like the characters, like, across the board, though. Like, I think you took umbrage with Bernard's kind of mission.
Yeah.
But I really like that character. I like that he was a klutz. I like how he had faults. I think I pointed out in other films where I said the character, well, Oliver and Company,
yeah.
where, what's his face? That Dodger is like this badass, basically. And I kind of liked the character despite his lack of depth, despite the fact that he was a single note character. But Bernard is someone I can relate to.
Right, but I like Bernard in the first film better than I like Bernard in this film.
Okay.
I don't mind that he grew. I like that he grew.
Yeah.
But it just felt like it could have... It was a forced triangle that they put together.
Right.
And I don't think it's a natural triangle in any means. Like, chemistry-wise, it didn't work for me.
Okay. I thought Bernard was a little bit too much in the first movie. I thought he was... almost annoying in his hesitance and his he was so kind of withdrawn from the world that it's like just get on with it, dude.
Right. I'm never really
he had more self-confidence this time around, but it was just enough to get what he needed to do. Like, the big...
It's a toned-down
Bernard's
Bob Newhart.
Big moment is when he like, kind of tackles that warthog.
Yeah, and then says, go.
Yeah, and he's like, you know, I'm tired of being pushed around. I've been pushed around this entire trip. I'm going to start taking things in my... You know, I'm going to take control of my own life. And he does. So that I liked. I related to it. And I like seeing the underdog get his day.
Right. I think this movie would have been better if Bianca wasn't there.
This movie would have also been better if Beyonce was there instead of Bianca.
Which Beyonce? Beyonce today? Beyonce from 1990?
Take your pick.
Okay.
Take your pick.
I take no pick. No comment on that one. This is another film, if we're looking into this Renaissance, that's not a sing-songy affair. This is not a Broadway musical.
It is not a musical.
Not at all. There's no real songs. There's just...
Also a plus.
Which
is great.
Somebody
who likes musicals, yeah. No, that's fine. This could have a reprieve once in a while.
No. I like the storyline. Yeah. I just think that this is the last one we're going to see for a while.
Yep.
And so enjoy it.
Yes. Enjoy it while it lasts.
Because I don't think we get one until Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That sounds right.
Yeah, even Atlantis has some singing, dancing things.
Yeah, but cool. Yeah, this is easily like one of my top five favorite films.
Yeah, this is easily.
So I'm really excited that we got to see
more
it.
Of my bottom films.
I'm. It blows my mind that the next podcast that we're actually going to record is Lion King. I'm gonna have to start preparing for that.
Yeah. Are you gonna have a guest on this one?
Yeah, we're going into movies that I actually saw when they come up. That's super weird. This is very strange. This podcast is taking a wild and unexpected turn. I don't know what's gonna happen next.
just you heard it here first. Dragaroo's mind just went.
Yeah. So basically, I'm gonna be extremely biased for the next.
I think both of us. I think honestly, let's put it this forward. Warning, we're both going to be biased because we grew up in the 90s.
Yes.
These are our childhood films.
Giant nostalgia trip.
I don't know if it's... We'll see. I'm going to try to take this as the straight and narrow, trying to be like so judgmental. And hopefully that balances out Dragaroo's nostalgic.
Okay, yeah. I promise no objectivity. I'm sorry.
But we're hoping to have a lot of guests, so hopefully the guests will provide their own nostalgia.
Yeah.
And
some additional perspective. We definitely have a great get for next week.
Next week is a brilliant. Yes. Beauty and the Beast is a great one.
Yeah, I think that'll be fun.
That might be the best of this lot yet.
Could be.
I did like Little Mermaid though. That worked out pretty well.
Yes, it did.
It was too much of me talking though.
We had some good conversation.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the Lion King and
Beauty and the Beast
and Aladdin.
And Aladdin. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that'll be a good way to. Kind of kick this year off.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. I guess one of us is going to need to be objective.
That would be me.
Because I don't.
I'll stick to objective.
Like I don't know. You know, some of those movies, like Aladdin, I haven't watched in a long time. And again, target audience didn't have a problem with it as a kid, so I'm expecting to like it. I'm expecting to be able to explain away all the inconsistencies and the fact that certain animals can or cannot talk and. The radar is showing pings from islands where transmissions may or may not have come from because I have to.
I am not like that. So if you would like the straight and narrow perspective,
yes,
tell it like it is.
If you want a wet blanket, Katatonic Cat is here for you.
I am not a wet blanket.
But someone has to be.
If you want to be, basically everyone says that I'm wrong with how I don't like some movies.
No, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying you're wrong. No. You're entitled to your opinion.
Yeah, yeah. There are people that say that I'm getting nasty hate mail about Robin Hood. I'm not living Robin Hood down.
Yeah. Well, we all make choices in life.
I thought you were going to say we all make mistakes in life. Can't take them back now. No. Okay, well, this is I'm ready to dive more into the 90s and this Disney Renaissance, and hopefully be a nice way to kind of take this through the next 20 weeks. It's about another 9 films.
Yep.
So that'll get us through summer.
Yep.
So exciting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Man. This is going to be a weird time. Because, you know, like a lot of this stuff up to this point, like, I've seen once, if ever, but the movies we're about to see, I have strong opinions about just about every one. So, yep. Yeah, should be fun.
We will have debates, great debates. Yeah. We might actually have a lot more, like, I would come back and be like, this animal does not talk to this animal, and what's going on with this one?
Are we going to revisit the show next week? Oh, man, I'm going to have to start doing my homework. All right.
Yeah.
Bring it.
Bring it. That's what this is. That's the way we're going to end this podcast. Bring it. Now. we'd like to, this is a great kickoff and for 2014. We have a great podcast next week for Beauty and the Beast and a great guest. And we should have a lot of guests on the next many, many podcasts as more people are very familiar with these films and have their own nostalgic and I would say their own heartfelt thoughts about these films. And it kind of kicked off with our last week where we discussed Little Mermaid, and it's going to continue on until the next couple of podcasts. So it should be very enjoyable. And please join us for the next Disney Renaissance.
Exactly. Yeah, what he said.
I'm Katatonic Cat.
And I'm Greg Guru.
And this is Two Guys Without a Clue.
Should we sit there in unison? No.
Okay, sure.
All right. Okay.